Okay. So we are up to... What's wrong? Okay. We are up to Perek Chaf, chapter 20. We have finished the assignment of all of the land. Everybody got their shares, the people on the eastern side of the Yarden, the people on the western side of the Yarden, and Dan, who started on the western side of the Yarden, but went to the eastern side of the Yarden. We have them all. And that brings us to Perek Chaf, chapter 20, and the Ir Miklat. Basically, we have two sections that we need to cover still in terms of dividing up land. One is the Ir Miklat, the cities of refuge, and then the other is the Arei HaLevim, the cities that Levi is going to get scattered around the country. So first, we have the Arei Miklat, these cities of refuge, and there are three biblical mitzvahs that are involved with these cities. Mitzvah number one is set them up, which is what we're doing now, the designation of the cities. Mitzvah number two is that if somebody commits murder by accident, in certain types of accidents, it's a little more specific than that, but if someone does, you send them to live there. And then they're going to be tried, and if they are in fact guilty, then they stay there until the Kohen Gadol dies. And then the third is that in the event that somebody committed murder by accident, and he says, I really don't want to live in this city. It's golos, it's exile. That's what this is. So he says, I'd rather stay home, so let me bribe people. I'll pay off everybody and just say, let me stay where I am and not be exiled. You're not allowed to accept that. You have to send him there. And it's kind of odd, I suppose, that you need that third mitzvah, meaning we have a general prohibition against the court accepting bribes. So why do we need a special prohibition of don't take a bribe in this particular circumstance? What would you say?
It's the family. Maybe he's paying off the family.
Right. It's not necessarily talking about paying off the Beis Din. It could be talking about paying off the victim's family.
Right.
Because there is this concept of Goel Hadam, that the redeemer of the blood, the relative of the person he killed, is not supposed to go killing him. However, if he does, he's not considered murder, and that's his own discussion as to why we say that, but that's the law. So the murderer might look at the city of refuge and say, this really isn't about a punishment of exile. It's really meant for my safety. So if I have another way to ensure my safety, specifically bribing the Goel Hadam, this redeemer, then I'll be able to stay out of the Ir Miklat. I can stay out of the city of refuge.
The words bribing?
The term is kofar. Kofar is payment for a life, ransom, essentially.
Okay, that's a completely different thing than bribing.
Well,
if you think about, we have criminal court and civil court.
Right.
Civil court is where you pay the money off. So
right.
I wouldn't say that they're bribing.
I was pretty sure of that.
I'm not a lawyer anyway, so yeah.
Right, but the because it's payment to get somebody out of what he's obligated to do. That's why I consider it bribery. But you're right. That's not the way he's looking at it. Really, this city of refuge has two identities. It is on the one hand exile, like I said before, it's a punishment, and on the other hand, it is for his protection. It's a refuge. The term miklat itself is, it's a term for it as a refuge. So you're right. He's saying, I'm really here for my safety. It's a refuge. So if I have another way to be safe, it's not bribery. I'm doing nothing wrong. I've managed to guarantee my safety in the same way that if he didn't live in the city, but there was no Goel Hadam, there was no redeemer, so he'd be safe then also. But the answer is, he's not allowed to do it because it also has this identity as a place of punishment for him. It has this,
right?
This other aspect to it.
Or he's genuinely sorry, and he wants to be able to help the other family by at least giving them money because he can't give them the life back.
Right.
So it's a way of saying, I'm apologizing, because just saying sorry is not enough. And especially if he did a Bishkadah.
Yeah,
so there's a way for him to feel like he's redeeming himself.
Right. So the answer is he can always pay them.
I was going to say the same thing.
No.
He can always pay them. It's just not going to get him out of the city.
So he doesn't have to? Why does he have to get him out of the
city? Well, that's what we're talking about. That's this mitzvah. That's what this mitzvah is.
I think there's a short time until the Kohen Gadol does. Let's say he dies the next week. I'm just saying, is the Goel Hadam guilty? If he kills him after he gets out of the Arei Miklat, it's murder, you're saying. like.
In other words, he gets out. The Kohen Gadol dies.
You know,
and the
right.
So at that point, it's murder. Yes.
It's murder.
Yeah. Yeah. The question is, why are we licensing the Goel Adam in the first place?
Yeah. You know, it seems funny. You know, right. You're like. Or waiting the punishment. Yeah,
right. Right. So one way to look at it is that this is meant to be a deterrent for people to make them more careful. In other words, you should know if you commit murder by accident, and again, we have to distinguish between types of accidents. I mentioned that there are only particular accidents that cause this, meaning if it's fully ones, if it's something he could never have seen coming, then he's not going to be liable. He's not going to have to go to the city of refuge.
So if like his ladder falls on someone, he's in the house and the ladder outside kills someone.
He could potentially not have to go to the city at all. And there's no Goel Adam. There's nothing like it. This is one in which.
I mean, there might be someone who's out to get him.
But then he's not licensed to do it.
But it was a total
There are always people who are out to
get him.
But yes, then it's murder. Correct. It's only in this unique circumstance that we're saying it's not. Because what happened here was not intentional murder, but it was carelessness. Mm-hmm. And so maybe what we're doing by allowing for the possibility of the Goel Adam is putting some teeth into this so that the so that people will be more careful. We're going to try to allowing for this possibility, even though they try to prevent it. And actually, when this person, when the murderer goes to the city of refuge, he's escorted by two people who are supposed to try to, if he's encountered by the Goel Adam,
right.
He meets the Goel Adam, they're supposed to try to talk the Goel Adam out of it. Because we don't want him to do this. And one of the rules for setting up the cities is that they have to all be equidistant. We talked about this when we were trying to figure out the boundaries of Israel. We said that the Torah says Vishilashta es Gavul Artzacha, you shall divide it in three, which we take to mean that the distance from the northern border to the first city, and from the first city to the second city, working your way south, from the second city to the third, and from the third city to the southern border, they have to be equidistant in order to ensure that they will always be able to get to the Eir Miklat, always be able to get to the city. You're maximizing the possibility that it'll get there. So we don't want this person to get killed, but the possibility is there. Linda,
are you ready? Are we licensing a Goel Adam to do that?
Well, we're still saying he's not supposed to do it. We're just not going to put him on trial for murder if he doesn't. Yeah, I mean, you can call it licensing, in a sense, because he knows he's not subject to capital punishment for it.
I'm thinking of the mafia getting their, the person that kills it over to Italy or wherever they're getting them to afterwards, and to protect them.
Right.
That sounds exactly like the same thing to me.
But they can always kill it, like, let's say they're there when the person gets killed, they could just attack him right away, you know.
But he hasn't been tried.
Well, what's supposed to happen is that
he gets killed right away before he gets to the Army Club, that's not
hypothetically, that can happen. Yes. No, I mean, that can happen. And frankly, though, if you look at it, you know, if you look at that case in light of any system of law, they tend to, you know, say those are extenuating circumstances and they're not going to consider that a full-blown act of murder. And the cases happen.
So how different documented cases in the Tanakh? Of people who were saved at the Army Club? Like, how many
right, so that's the funny
there?
Thing. We don't have any cases of someone going to an Eir Miklat that we're familiar with. We don't have actual cases. No, I mean, first of all, they were all occupied by Levium. So Levium are living in all of these. These are among the 48 cities of Levium. So someone's there. But yes, we don't have an actual case. Like, so-and-so went to an Eir Miklat. I'm trying to remember. I had this discussion once with somebody about it in the Gemara, about whether we had such a case.
Eir
Miklat stops. Eir Miklat stops, I believe, before the end of the first Beis Hamikdash. So you're not going to see it thereafter. Sorry.
So there's only Levim living in the Eir Miklat. There's nobody else.
Unless there is.
There will be Levim, and other people are allowed to live there. It's not like it's off limits to people in general. They can rent from the Levim, and then you have these. Right, but he's still going to be allowed to kill him. There's no force field. The Goel stops here.
He rents an apartment next door.
It's not like it's being used.
It seems like when it stops, I have to look into that. I'm not 100% sure it stops.
This is more like when a Kohen Gadol dies, there's no ever mention of it. But
of a particular event that happened with somebody.
When a Kohen, Are there mentions of which you know that
not
the
that
do you know the names of the Kohanim?
And we know the names of quite a few of the Kohen and Gedolim, yeah. I don't recall any case. That doesn't mean it's not there. It just means I don't recall. But
it's not there.
No, not necessarily.
Does it say why it's the cities of Levim? Like,
yes. So thank you for the segue.
That's our topic, actually.
I wanted to note two things. One, the Sefer HaChinuch in source number 2 offers explanations for what the benefits are of having an Ir Mikla. What's the goal of having this city? And he says in source 2, Lefi Sha'avon Haratzicha Chamur Ad Ma'od Sheba Hashchasas Ha'olam. He says the sin of murder is very severe. It destroys the world. Ad Sha'amru Zichrona Levracha Sha'horeg Nevesh Mezid Afilo Asakola Mitzvos Eino Nitzol Min Hadin. He quotes a statement from the sages that a person who kills intentionally will never be saved from being punished, even no matter what he's done, however righteous he's been. Vilachain Ra'ui L'misha Haraka Afilu Shogeg Mikamen Shabast Hakala Gedola Kizual Yado She'yitzta'er Ala Atzar Golut. He says this is such a terrible thing that it makes sense that even if it was accidental, nonetheless, a person should endure pain as a result, and specifically here, galus, exile. Sheshakul kim'at kitzar misa, because exile is almost the equivalent of the pain of death. Shenifrata adam me'ohava, because the person is separated from all of his friends. U'me'eretz mulatato, land where he was born. V'shochein kol yamav imzarim, and he's going to live out his life among strangers. He's there indefinitely. He's there till the Kohen Gadol dies. Who knows how long that's going to be. So it's meant to be, on one level, a traumatic experience for the murderer. And you should not look at it as a place of safety. It's a place of suffering, and that he has to go, be exiled there. V'od yesh tikkun ha'olam b'mitzvah. It also improves the world. K'mo shabir ha'kasuv she'inatzeilim zeh miyad goel adam. L'val yehargenu alocha mas b'chapav. It also saves him from this redeemer of the blood, the relative of the victim, because this way he won't be killed without having been guilty, because at the end of the day, it wasn't intentional when he did it. Shavei shogeg, he did it accidentally. That's the second benefit. And then the third benefit they mention is, v'od tovelus b'davar, l'vli yir'u krovei ha'mukeh ha'rotzeach le'enehem tamid b'makom sh'nesta ha'ra'ah. Right? The, whatever percentage of accidents it is that happened close to home, it's very possible that the person who killed him was somebody known to the family, somebody they saw all the time. So imagine if they now have to be reminded of this as they're in the supermarket, they're in shul, wherever they are, they see this person, and they know he's not being punished at all, because he says, well, it was accidental, but it reawakens for them the memory of what happened every time. So therefore, we're going to put them away somewhere. We're going to hide them away. They'll go to the city of refuge, and this way the victim's family doesn't have to see him every day.
What about his family?
His family actually goes with him. They go with him. The Talmud even discusses if he's a teacher of Torah, then his students go with him, possibly. Or if a teacher of Torah's student kills somebody, then the teacher of Torah has to go with him, so be careful.
The kind of buy your safety is because it's also a punishment, but then we're saying it's not punishment.
No, so that's exactly the point. That's why he can't buy his safety, you're right. Because it's not just a place of safety for him, it's also a place of punishment. That's true. So we don't want him buying his way out of it.
What if a Levi does it? Where does he go? Does he have to go to a different city?
So the Gemara discusses it. I don't remember offhand. I'd have to look it up.
And then that third thing about having to see him, like, he could stay there, technically, right? He's living in a Yermiklot already, but...
Well, were all murderers who did it on purpose killed, or there was like jail?
So there is no jail within the standard system. There were, for certain limited cases, there were cases in which they would imprison somebody. Mm-hmm. But so, for example, if somebody hit somebody else and they wanted to see is the victim going to live, then they would incarcerate the person who had hit him until they knew whether this was going to be murder or some mm-hmm. other charge. But generally speaking, you don't have incarceration as a tool of the Beis Din. At the same time, it was very, very hard to put somebody to death. And you've probably heard about this before. The Torah says, in trying a case involving murder, v'hitzilu ha'idas harotzeach, which, in context, those words mean one thing. However, the Chachamim understood there, the sages understood, a message from that. And the message they took from it is, literally, v'hitzilu ha'idas harotzeach, the group of judges are obligated to save the murderer. Meaning that they're supposed to find any way possible within this litigation to find a way that they will exonerate the person. So they cross-examine the witnesses on points that have nothing to do with the case at hand, just to try to get one of them to say, I don't know, to something. And then they'll throw out the testimony.
So then if they throw it out, do they say it was done by accident, and then they become an accidental person?
No.
So they got off even more than a person accidentally.
Out there?
So don't admit that you did something, because you'll be punished more.
Or say it was on purpose.
Yeah, because you're
better.
I don't like the system.
Now, if the person dies, then you have to go there and be caught.
No, if you did it on purpose.
Yeah.
But you don't have witnesses or no proper, you know, and so on. Right. So the answer is almost.
Why are you worried about? Yeah, but you don't want to.
What are you talking about? If you're punished more,
why are we worried about
it
if you're there
by mistake and admit that you did it by mistake, then you do it on purpose and you get yourself out of it?
But his testimony won't be counted because you can't testify against yourself.
No, but they are trying to find ways to get you off of being committed of doing it intentionally.
No, but if a witness is saying we saw it and it was an accident, then maybe your own declaration won't help you. Well, if there are no witnesses, nothing's happening.
I'm curious about this.
You're not going to the City of Refuge, and
not talk about the cases of what accident or what.
So I wasn't planning on it.
I think we like the topic of murder here.
There's a lot of distinction between someone who kills somebody else. Let's say he's holding an axe and he was picking it up and he hit somebody, versus he was trying to chop the tree and he swung the axe and then hit somebody on the way down. And there are differences drawn based on the level of carelessness that's involved in the action. It's a whole discussion. The Gemara in Makos, basically, is where this is. Maybe that's the topic after Yehoshua. No, we've hit our topic.
Can I say now or
no? Maybe until the end we'll discuss it. Otherwise, we'll go on. Yeah. But in terms of this, in terms of the question of, does that mean that people will be running around free because the Beis Din is doing everything it can to exonerate them? The answer is yes and no. Yes, it would be very rare for a Beis Din to kill using those rules. However, Beis Din has an ace up its sleeve in this regard. The Torah warns multiple times, "Ubi'ar tahara mikirbecha," you have to eradicate evil from your midst. And similar verses like that. And that licenses the court where they feel it is necessary for the protection of society to carry out what could be called extrajudicial execution. In other words, they can kill somebody without going through all of the proper procedures where they believe there's a threat to society. So if you have somebody who is a murderer and is going out and killing people and we just don't have proper witnesses, the court has it within its ability to, as they say in the mafia, take care of it. So we know of a couple of cases where that happened, yes. The Gemara records cases where they did that. They felt something had to be done, and they did it. And it's not supposed to be the norm. This isn't supposed to be the way that we take care of our society. But it can happen, yeah. Can and did.
You could also have somebody who went to an Yermi Klot and then they killed again. Mm-hmm. You know, and then what do you do?
Well, was it on purpose or accident?
Right.
Do you have to leave the Yermi Klot with the client time? Let's say you want to stay. Let's say he dies after a week and you're nervous.
Right, so that's one of the questions that I always wondered about, is does he have the option of staying? There's a fellow in Clinton Park who every year when we get to the end of Sefer Bamidbar, where we lane it, so he always emails me this question. Every year he emails me the question, does he have the option of staying? And every year my answer is, I don't know. He keeps hoping that next year I'll find something.
And he has nice neighbors, he has nice backyard.
Would they compare it to like a slave who after 7 years has to decide whether he doesn't have a choice
right.
whether he has to go.
Right. There's because slavery is considered to be a negative state in and of itself. You know, it's a state that was religiously bad.
This is punishment, so
right.
This would be...
But this is a state of punishment where it's not a religiously negative. It's a personally negative. So for you, it's not. Maybe it's fine. Slavery is a religious law. So I think that changes things. But it's a very real question. I think that it's...
Does this apply only to men?
Nope. Everybody. Yeah.
Kids?
If they're a minor.
But you said other people live in the area.
Yeah, the Levium live there. Like, it's home for them.
So they want to stay, then they stay.
Do they want those neighbors?
So again, that's the question, is right. Does someone have the option of staying? And you know, my answer is still, I don't know. But that's one point about the city, is in terms of the benefits of having this system. The other question is the question about Levium. Why are we sticking them with Levium in particular? So take a look at source number 3, also from the Sefer HaChinuch. Well, he gives 2 reasons. He says, "Umipnei godel ma'alasam bekosher pa'alam," because of their great level, because of their fine conduct, v'chin erkam, their fine value, meaning of the Levium, nivchara artsam liklot kol horig nevesh pishgaga yoser me'artzos shar hashvatim. That's why their land, their cities, were selected more than anyone else's. Because perhaps their land, sacred as it is, where the Levium live, will atone for the murderer. There's merit just being there among them. There's merit to living among the Levium. They're great people. And then the second explanation that's offered is another reason, because the Levium are people of heart, meaning people of thought. Yiduim b'ma'alos hamidos v'chachamos nichbados. They're people who have fine traits. They have great wisdom. Any Levium here? Okay, so by osmosis. Yaduo l'kol shalo yistimu harotzeach sheinatzel aleihem v'lo yiguvo. So you know that they won't hate the murderer who runs to them, and they're not going to touch him. What happens if somebody kills a Levi and then has to run to an Eir Miklat? So you might be afraid, right? If this was any other Shevet, if this was God, and they ran to a city of God, they might be in trouble. But because it's Levium, Levium are higher than this. Levium are better than that. There may also be a separate point. This I always wondered about last several years or so, wondered about the Eir Miklat. Was there like an education program for them? Like, what are they doing while they're there?
Are we prehab?
Yeah. Is there any sort of prehab going?
Did they find God?
So, no, you sort of wonder, like, is there some kind of program? You have the Levium there. Levium are teachers. So is there some kind of program there?
Well, we don't even know if people went there, right?
Well, I mean, we know that it exists as a framework. We have the cities set up. We just don't have anyone's name who actually goes there.
There must have been a lot of people.
Well, there are 6 cities.
A lot.
Again, the Levium is just living there waiting. Like, for all we know, they're just, you know, they have to sign up.
Welcome.
Last accident 500 days ago, whatever it is. I don't know. So this is the city of refuge. This is the Eir Miklat. And on the one hand, you look at this parak and think, you know, it sort of seems like it's going to be very technical. Okay, these are the cities we assign. But you see something very interesting, a message that will come out within the parak itself as we go through it. So let's take a look. It's a very short parak. Begins Pasuk Aleph. Vayidaber Hashem el Yehoshua lemor. Now that one is already strange. Vayidaber Hashem el Yehoshua lemor. What word should be the 5th word in that sentence? No, the 5th word. I'm sorry. I can still count. 4th. Sorry. 4th. I'm good.
Who should he be speaking to?
If you had this sentence, Vayidaber Hashem el blank lemor. Moshe.
Yeah.
It's always Moshe.
Right.
This is. We are told by the Malbim, based on the Gemara in Makos, this is the only case in all of Tanakh in which that sentence does not have Moshe as the 4th word. It's Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, and here is Vayedaber Hashem El Yehoshua Lemor. Okay.
He never speaks to Yehoshua?
He certainly speaks to Yehoshua, but not with this form. This is the Moshe formulation. This is the Moshe way of speaking. So, what does that mean? If you take a look on your sheet at source number 4, you get the Gemara in Makos. Amar Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina, Mipnei Ma Ne'amra Parshas Rotzkim Balashon Aza. The Gemara asks a different question. The Gemara's question is this word Vayedaber. Usually, the verb Dalet Bet Reish is taken to mean is speaking in a strong tone. Dalet Bet Reish is also a verb meaning to lead somebody along. So it's a strong form, as opposed to Aleph Mem Reish, which we also means to say, but is usually taken as a more gentle form of speech. Then there's another one, Lahagid, which is considered even stronger. But they want to know, why is it? It sounds like Hashem is angry when he says, Vayedaber. Dichse Vayedaber Hashem al Yehoshua le'mor, Daber al b'nei Yisrael le'mor, Tinu lachem et so on. And it uses Dibarti a third time in the sentence. So why does it say Dibur in this sentence? Mipnei Shehein Shel Torah. Because these are biblical. And then the Gemara asks, is that true? Is Dibur always really a harsh phrase and a harsh word? And the answer is yes. So what the Gemara here says is that it is harsh, the harsh language is used here because this is biblical. What does that mean when he says it's biblical? True, but what does that mean? It means the mitzvah is biblical. The mitzvah of setting up Ir Miklat was mentioned already in the Chumash. Hashem told Moshe about setting up the city. So what? And therefore what? So take a look at the Malbim in source number 5. He says, Lo nimsa bedivrei hanevim, sha'acha Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom, l'shaon v'yedaber Hashem el navi ploni le'mor chutz mipo. Right? As I said, the only time you ever find v'yedaber Hashem el so-and-so le'mor, God spoke to so-and-so, saying, the only time you ever find it is with Moshe, except for this one place. So the Malbim explains the Gemara to mean that that's what they're picking up on. Not just the word Dalet Beis Reish, Dibur, but the fact that this is unique. The whole formulation here is unique. And it's because this is biblical. Rotze lomar meaning, Ki Dibur va'amira haba'im etzel hanavua hainu Torah shebichsav v'sharet v'Torah shebe'al peh. V'lo nitna Torah l'navi achrei Moshe. Levad po bo halacha she'ena mivo'arim batorah. He says, when Hashem speaks to a Navi, it is the written Torah and the spoken Torah that Hashem is communicating. You have the written Torah is that which was given to Moshe, and then Hashem speaks to the Navi and communicates the ideas verbally, but you never find new laws. However, here, in the laws that are going to be presented in this parak about the Ir Miklat, you're going to see laws that were not outlined in the Chumash. Not that contradict what's in the Chumash, but that spell out the procedure for going to such a city and talk about how it's done. So, the way Malbim understands the Gemara is that what it's trying to say is Hashem is saying, this really was a Moshe-level instruction. This was something I already started saying, in fact, to Moshe. And Vayedaber Hashem al Yehoshua le'mor, you're playing Moshe now. I am giving you instructions the way I gave them to Moshe. Which, to my mind, is an elevation of Yehoshua. You know, Yehoshua is now operating, so to speak, on a Moshe level. Clear? Yeah.
But can we also go back to the fact that we spoke about Hashem said, like, the way I was with Moshe, I'll be with you.
Yeah.
So, can't we say that this is maybe because this is such a complicated or complex or hard thing to set up for the Jewish people that Hashem's, like, kind of reminding everyone, the way I was with Moshe, I was with you, and this is, like, legit.
Yeah. Entirely possible. Yeah. No, it's entirely possible that this is reinforcing or reminding them of Hashem being with Yehoshua as he was with Moshe. It could also be, we're now at the end of the delegation of who's getting to go where, and a reminder to the nation that I am with Yehoshua. Yehoshua did all of this at my word, just like when Moshe did. Or it's sort of a reward, in the sense that Yehoshua has now fulfilled his mission. This was his job, right? Yehoshua's job is bring them in, fight the wars, divide up the land. granted that they didn't fight everyone they were supposed to fight, then there's, you know, there are problems in that regard. Nonetheless, Yehoshua has fundamentally done what he was supposed to do, and Hashem is sort of underscoring that by giving this Moshe-style address. Okay, so pasuk bay, sentence two. Yeah, in half an hour, you only missed one pasuk.
But we
had
a lot.
And a law degree.
Yes. Daber al b'nei Yisrael lemor. Tell the Jews. Tenu lachem es arei hamikvat asher dibarti alechem biyad Moshe. I want you to give the cities of refuge, because the different shvatim, the different tribes, are going to have to give those cities. So give the cities of refuge that I already told you about via Moshe. Now, that raises certain questions, specifically the question of why now? Why did this instruction come now? Why wasn't it when they first entered the land? Why at this moment in time are they being told to do this? So one answer is very simple. On your sheet, in the reverse side of the sheet, I made reference to a pasuk in Sefer Devarim. Well, not just that, but that the Torah actually frames the mitzvah of designating the cities by saying, Ki yachris Hashem Elokechas Hagoyim, when God cuts off all of those nations, meaning after you have fought them, then designate the cities. So the mitzvah only begins now. And I think that's pshat. I think that's the fairly straightforward read. But take a look at source number 7. Here, I've got another. Rabbi Chaim Dov Rabinovich in the Da'at Sofrim. Da'at Sofrim is a running commentary to Yehoshua. I must admit that I haven't been using it, but the Da'at Mikra refers to it, so that's how I saw it. He says, "Hamilchama ha'aruka lekibush ha'aretz haragil or lechbosh ha'aretz hirgila es ha'am l'shvichud damim." He says the long war of conquest accustoms them to killing people, to shedding blood. Hafrashas arei hamiklat tzricha haisa l'shamesh hachraza al isur hapigia ba'adam. And so you're designating these cities in order to declare, you know, killing people is a bad thing. You know, this is part of the problem, which I think we may have discussed a little bit when we talked about them entering into the land and all the bloodshed and so on, which is the inverted morality of war. You know, all your life you're raised to believe that you're not supposed to kill people, you're not supposed to hurt people, you're supposed to respect other people's property and everything else, and that's the mark of a good person, right? Because we have good kindergarten teachers, and that's what they tell people. But then you send somebody out to war, and if they follow that, they have failed, and they have failed their nation. The mark of the good soldier is the one who is going to carry out the mission and is going to kill the enemy and so forth. That's the way it works. This system of morality is reversed. And so the Torah has numerous laws that take that into account about the way you conduct a war and the way you structure your camp and so forth. But what Rabbi Rabinovich points out is that once the war is over, you now have to go back to normal life. And you have to flip your morality again. And so this separation of the cities is a way to do that, is a way to accomplish that. Hashem says, I want you to designate these cities after all the wars, like we say, like in the pasuk that's in source number 6, because, he's saying, you need to get back to what life is supposed to be like. And so, designate the cities, declare that no, you're not supposed to go around killing people. And so it underscores the fact that even killing someone accidentally is going to carry a severe penalty. As well as trying to prevent blood vengeance, we don't want the Goel Hadam, the relative of the victim, to carry this out. We may not punish him for murder, but we don't want this to happen. And so the Torah is saying, okay, time to reassert the standard moral order. Clear? Okay.
So why do they spend so much time talking about if you do it accidentally rather than even talking about, you know, that you're just not allowed to kill and you know, talk about, or is that because it was only in the Torah and it's not necessary to repeat it? Or?
Yeah, I suspect that you wouldn't have the same effect if you simply told people, by the way, the Torah says lo tirzach. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think it would carry the same message as we are taking 6 of your cities and designate them as a refuge, and if anybody kills someone by accident, they're going into exile. Yeah, I think that the visual of it, I think, is important. It might be nice to repeat it every once in a while for people, but, you know, they weren't shul on Shabbos. They heard, you know, what Parsha said.
So, I think this is controversial. I mean, so how would you equate this with what's happening in Israel now, where people were walking around with guns?
Right. It's a huge problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to quote the Golda Meir lines. I'm so tired of hearing it.
Okay.
But you know what I'm talking about. But the concern for desensitization, right? The concern that people who kill, even justifiably, have damaged themselves, is a very substantive one. The classic source that gets quoted on it is Yaakov. When Yaakov goes to war against Esav. So it says, Vayira Yaakov Me'od, Vayetzer Lo. He was very afraid, and he was pained. And so the Medrash asks, what does that mean that he was pained? Like, he was afraid, I get. Esav has 400 men with him, and they're all coming to attack, and so forth. That I understand. But he was pained. Sounds like something's bothering him. Why do you add that after he's afraid? And so the Medrash on it says, he's afraid that he might get killed. But he's pained that he might have to kill somebody else. Because he doesn't want to do that either. Granted, it's justified. Granted, it's self-defense and so on. Nonetheless, this isn't something we're supposed to do. Right? That's one of the explanations that's offered for why David can't build the Beis HaMikdash. You know, there are other explanations too. But that's one of them is that it's because he has shed blood, even though he's doing it at divine instruction. It's still not appropriate. The Torah says the Mizbeach, the altar, can't have hewn stone. Meaning that the stone can't be cut with an iron blade. It says, Kichar b'chayinachto aleha, you have raised up your sword upon it, v'tachal aleha, and you have desecrated it. To use the knife on it is considered destructive. But again, you know, you're doing it to build a mizbeach. Nonetheless, this is a serious concern throughout Judaism, and I think that's what the message is here, you know, for this problem. Yeah.
For Sukkot, we were actually in Israel. We went to Caliber 3, I think it was called, that, where it's an anti-terrorism thing. And it's interesting because this is before really everything started to happen. And what they taught us is that their goal is to, you don't shoot to kill the person, even when you're trying to save someone from a terrorist. You actually just get them to stop. Shoot to injure them. Yeah,
like
they want to be able to feel like they're still real people and they're not out there to kill people. And it's actually a hard pill to swallow these days because a lot of those people that are injured go right back to doing the same thing again.
Right. But the first we get right, so we take care of them. But then it's like what Rabbi said.
Yeah,
I read the
email from
right.
Did you hear that?
Doctor. For anyone who's interested, a lunch and learn week from yesterday at Schwartz-Levitsky Feldman, the topic is using deadly force on a terrorist.
Really?
So yes. That's 12:30 on Wednesday. The Young and Eglinton. It's not downtown, but it's compared to Thornhill.
Thornhill.
It's
past
Yeah. Yeah. So, but that's, you know, that's a real, but yes, this is a live issue. And I've been reading articles on that, you know, on the topic, and, you know, anybody who's in law enforcement, forget military, says, you're crazy if you tell me to shoot to wound. That it doesn't work practically, it doesn't work, it's a very bad idea. Nonetheless, you know, the alternative of shoot to kill is, you know, is scary on many different levels, one of them being the impact that it has on the person who's doing it. All true, all problematic. Okay, so, with that in mind, they're now told to separate these cities, to designate them, so let's take a look. Pasuk Gimel, sentence 3. Lanus Shama Rotzeach, Makei Nefesh Bishgaga Vivli Das. This is for the murderer to flee there, the one who killed someone by accident, Vivli Das, without knowledge as much as without intent. Vayulachem Lemiklat, Migoel Hadam. This will be a place for them to get refuge from the relative of the victim. So he will run to one of these cities. And here we get the part that is added for Yahushua that we didn't see in the Chumash. V'yamad Pesach Shar Ha'ir. He stands at the gate of the city. Remember that in Tanakh, quite often, the gate of the city is the place where the elders meet, where judgment goes on. So he stands at the entrance, the gate of the city, and he tells the elders of the city what happened. They gather him into the city. It sounds like you have like a wall, right, around the city, and he has to pass their interview. They give him a place, and he dwells among them. Now notice the language, they give him a place. So if you take a look on your sheet, source number 8. His family is with him. Yeah, you were here for that part. But take a look at source number 8, which discusses how they ran these cities. And it's going to be important for a couple of reasons. But the Mishnah there in Mako says, Ma'alim hayu sachar la'levim divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says you had to pay rent. It isn't as though you go there and now you're just living there for free. You have to pay for your jail cell. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Meir Omer lo hayu ma'alim lahen sachar. Rabbi Meir disagrees and he says, no, you don't pay rent. In the Gemara on that Mishnah, Amar Rav Kahana, machlokes b'sheish. Rav Kahana says the debate is regarding the 6 cities that we're talking about as the Ir Miklat. That's where there's a debate. Dimar Savar, because one view says that the Torah said, V'hayu lachem he'arim l'miklat. These cities shall be for you as a refuge, meaning for the murderer. L'klitat, that's what it's there for. And therefore, you don't pay rent. Umar Savar, but the other view, Rabbi Meir's view, I'm looking at what I wrote there. Well, let me see. All right, wait a second. The other view says it's for you for all of your needs. Sorry. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, I think I may have flipped on the sheet. Rabbi Yehuda, the first view is, right, it should be a refuge. That means that you should not pay rent. Yeah, I think I flipped Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda in my on the sheet. Okay. And then the other view says, Lachem l'chol tzarcheichem, it's for all of your needs, for Shevet Levi, and therefore, they can charge rent for it. Aval b'arbon u'shtayim, but the other 42 cities of Levi'im, divrei akol hayumadu lehen sachar, they had to pay rent. What this is showing us along the way is that it's not true that there were only 6 cities of refuge. All of the cities of Levi'im functioned as cities of refuge. However, these 6 were special, he's saying, in that in these 6, according to Rabbi Meir, you didn't have to pay rent. That's the first view of the debate. Then we get a second view. Rava disagrees. Amar le Rava. Rava says, I don't know what you're talking about. Havade lachem l'chol tzarcheichem mashma. He says, that can't be. The lachem, you know what? I was right the way I put it on the sheet. Yeah, the way it is fine. I don't want to confuse everybody, but the way I put it on the sheet is fine. Those are the 2 views. Rava says back to him, no, lachem means it is l'chol tzarcheichem for all of your needs, and what we get from that is that you don't pay rent in those cities. Ela amar Rava machlokes b'arba'a mushtayim. Rava says the debate is about the other 42 cities. Demar savar v'alehem titinu ki hanach l'klita. Umar savar v'alehem titinu ki hanach. Ma'anach l'chol tzarcheichem afhani nami l'chol tzarcheichem. Rava says the debate is about the other 42 cities, meaning that one view says you put an additional 42 on top of the 6, just like the 6 are to bring in the murderer, and you don't charge. So too in these. And the other one replies, no, balehem titinu kihanach, that it's just like these are for all of your needs, so too those are for all of your needs. Right. But in the 6, everybody agrees that they did not pay. So in other words, the view of Rava as opposed to Rav Kahana, Rava says in the 6 you don't pay, in the other 42 there's a debate. And Rav Kahana's view is that in the other 42 you do pay, and in the 6 there's a debate as to whether you're paying rent or not. But the reason I brought this on this pasuk is because the pasuk actually says, titnu, you're going to give these cities. It said, what was the language in the sentence? Right, you have to give him a place. So it sounds like you give it to him, not that you rent it to him. That's the idea. I'm still a little stuck on the Valehemtitnu versus Tzarchei Chemin here, but
I'm
going to leave it there.
Who's supposed to be paying for the upkeep of all these places that are not paying rent? Who's the burden on?
Levim. These are the cities of Levim. They get the land. It's actually nice, as we'll see when we get to the next paragraph, where they talk about where they lived. But those are their cities, and they maintain them. That's what they, that's part of their job. So that's what goes on. They're living in the city, and then as you go further into the parak, back in the Navi, we're up to Pasuk Hey, sentence 5, he cleared the interview, they gave him a place to be. V'chiyurdof go'el hadam acharav. When the Redeemer of the Blood pursues him, they will not put the murderer into his hand, they're not going to hand him over. Because he hit the other guy without knowledge, meaning again without intent. It wasn't as though he was his enemy yesterday and the day before. The Ashav Ba'ir Hahi, he will dwell in that city, Adam Dolifne Hoidala Mishpat, until he stands in front of the court to be judged. Admos HaKohen HaGadol, until the Kohen Gadol dies. Asher Yebayamim Bahem, whoever is the Kohen Gadol at that time. Az Yashuv HaRotzeach, then the murderer comes back. Uva El Iro Ve'el Beiso, he goes to his city, he goes back home. El Ha'ir Asher Nas Misham, to the city from which he had fled. Now, again, going back to the question of whether he has the right to stay in the city.
Translation says may. Mm-hmm. Translation says then the killer may return.
Interesting.
But in the pasuk, it doesn't seem like
he could be there the majority of his life.
Yeah.
It says shall the slayer return.
Right. And so I don't know whether he has to. The literal reading is not may. I'm not sure why they say may. Maybe they have a source for it. Unclear to me. Yeah, whether it is in fact may. But I call your attention to this source.
Shall.
Yeah.
What if he wants to go somewhere else?
Shall, I think, is more literal. Sorry?
What if he wants to go somewhere else entirely?
Or he can go to some third place, right.
So meaning it specifically says you should go back there. What if he doesn't want to go back to that place? Mm-hmm.
So maybe may. Maybe when they said may, it was to say he doesn't have to go back to where he had lived before. He can go to some other place. But again, I don't know. I don't know. Certainly he's not in the rent-free, right? He's not getting rent-free housing. Right. But take a look at source number 9. The classic question is always, why till the Kohen Gadol dies? Like, where did that come from? As your moment when he gets out. So this is one source in it. Midrash. Rabbi Meir Omer Rotzeach Mekatzer Yamav Shel Adam V'Kohen Gadol Marich Yamav Shel Adam. Rabbi Meir explains. He says, the murderer shortens a person's life. The Kohen Gadol's job is to lengthen people's lives. Because the Kohen Gadol, leading the Avodah, the service in the Beis HaMikdash, is an agent of life. Rabbi Omer, Rotzech Metameas Haaretz Mesalekes HaShchina, the Kohen Gadol Gorem L'Shchina Shetishra Al HaAdam Baaretz. Rabbi Meir says, because the murderer made the land impure by committing murder. He contaminated the land. He got rid of the Shekhinah. The Kohen Gadol causes the Shekhinah to be present. So they're opposites. The Kohen Gadol is on one side, and this murderer is on the other side. It's certainly an interesting point. I've also seen some suggest it's because there was a deficiency in the Kohen Gadol, and that if he had really been as great as he had to be, and daven for the people and so on, then this accidental murder would not have, it wouldn't have happened. All of these are after the fact, attempts to understand. I think if you try to apply logic to it and say, well, the Kohen Gadol is an agent of life. Therefore, when he dies, we'll let the agent of death go free. I'm not really clear on that.
They needed a figure that was constant.
The king couldn't be in 10 years. But couldn't it be
why tie someone's death?
After 7 years,
probably
their anger will
decrease,
so they don't go after you as much.
Next
Shemitah
year.
Yovel.
Everybody goes home at Yovel.
Yeah. It doesn't say anything about this being a punishment. They just say this is a protection.
Here it does. Yeah. Right. But if you look at the global presentation of it, you also find the indication. Like when we say he can't just give money, right, in order to not have to go, that indicates, if it's for his protection, why is it compulsory? He has to go. There is this element of galut to it also.
He has, maybe discuss it before. He has to go. What if, like, he already sees the arrangement. The family knows it was a mistake. They're not going to come after him.
Yeah,
he still has to go anyway.
Correct. Correct. So, yeah, the association with the Kohen Gadol is very difficult. I feel like we're missing something with all the different explanations, but I don't have a better one.
I think the whole setup is an uncomfortable... it just doesn't work for me. I don't understand why it would happen at all. I don't understand why we focus more on the ones who kill by accident than the ones who are killing on purpose, and why they would possibly get free rent. I mean, let's say somebody can't afford to live where they do. The rental fathers, if they're getting a free ride, that's what they're getting. They don't get killed. They don't get, their whole family comes with them and they get free rent. It doesn't sound like a punishment to me.
I mean,
you have to uproot your whole life.
Shauna,
your whole family,
you grew up here.
Your teachers come with you. Your students come with you.
You grew up in Toronto. You've only lived in Toronto.
Right. And somebody will move to Australia because they'll get free rents there and a free house. People do it. I'm not saying for me, but people do things like that. And especially if all your teachers and your students and your family comes with you.
On the list of most traumatic events in people's lives, the top three are death, divorce, and moving. And there's a reason for that, having done it a few times. It's not so simple. Death isn't number one on the list. No, that's the truth of it. It really is, and especially in their day, when you don't have all the various telecommunications and ease of transportation and people coming to visit and whatever else, like you're there, you're gone. Your whole past existence is wiped out, and you have to start from scratch. Whatever business they had, whatever relationships they had, theirs are all gone. They're starting from scratch.
Like their livelihood.
They're starting entirely from scratch.
It still sounds like it's more for protection than punishment. And it is. It's exactly the same as a witness protection plan. They didn't actually commit a crime necessarily in a witness protection plan, right? They gave in someone. They still have to uproot their whole family and move and so on and so on.
And change their identity. And is that more of a punishment or a protection, too?
Definitely punishment. I would think the people. I mean, they feel protected, but
you're protected, but it's a big punishment. Yeah. You're really sacrificing a lot.
But they killed someone.
No, I'm saying there's a reason they should be punished. No, I'm saying in a witness protection, they should be punished, but in a witness protection, you're really.
Do you want to cover anything else?
That's a fun debate. The Pasuk Zion, sentence 7. We're going to set aside the Ari Miklat now. So I realized, actually, I had one more source that I wanted to put on there. I didn't put on the sheet for some reason. All right, I'll explain it. But it was supposed to be there. Vayagdishu es kedesh bagalil bahar naftali ves shchem bahar Ephraim ves kiryas arbahi chevron bahar Yehuda. So they designate kedesh in the Galil, har naftali. Remember, Naftali was up north. Naftali and Asher were the two northernmost ones. I can't believe I actually know the map now. It's very exciting. The Shechem Bahar Ephraim, the city of Shechem on Mount Ephraim, which we talked about last week, where Yoshua is buried, that central site, and Kiryat Arba, Hebron, in Har Yehuda. And we know Yehuda has that southern region. So you're running north to south there. Umeever leYarden Yerichom Mizracha, and on the eastern side of the Yarden, Nasnu as Betzer Bamidbar Bamishor Mimatei Reuven. You have Betzer in the wilderness in the plains of Reuven, and how you now you're going south to north. So Reuven is the southernmost area. That Ramot Bagilad Mimatei Gad, Ramot in Gilad. This is also known as Ramot Gilad. It comes up in Navi. And that's from God's Shevet. There's Golan Babashan Mimatei Menashe. And then you have Golan up north. There's a city called Golan. And that's from Menashe's land. Those are your cities. Now, we mentioned here Kiryat Arba, which is Hebron. Right, wasn't Kalev supposed to get Hebron? We had this whole discussion about how Kalev got Hebron. So the answer is, we'll see it in Perek Chaf Aleph, the city itself becomes a city of Levium, and therefore is able to become an Ir Miklat, and what Kalev actually has are the outskirts, the unwalled area outside of Hebron. That's what Kalev has. So you have three on the east side, and three on the west side. And then it concludes, Ela hayu areha mu'ada. These are the cities that were of mu'ada. Mu'ada is an odd word. This term mu'ada. Rashi says it comes from the word yi'ud, which is something that is designated. When you fly, your destination is Mekom Yad, the place that you designate, the place that you're going to. Radak says it's from the root Viud, which is a place of gathering. Either way, these are the cities. Lechol b'nei Yisrael, for all of the Jews, v'lagera gar b'selcham, and for the stranger who lived among them, lanus shama, to flee there, kol makei nefesh b'shgaga, anyone who killed somebody by accident, v'lo yomus b'yad goel adam ad omdo lifnei ha'edah, and he would not die at the hand of the redeemer of the blood, this relative, ad omdo lifnei ha'edah, until he would be judged. That's the conclusion of the section. However, it leaves a major question, which we're clearly not going to do this time, and it's a good thing, I guess, that I didn't bring all those other sources. I'll have to print them up for next time. But the major question that comes up is this. How many tribes live east of the Yarden?
Two.
Yeah.
Two and a half.
Two and a half. Two and a half plus Dunn.
Yeah.
Plus a little Dunn, right?
Okay.
You've got two and a half plus
not
some
yet,
of Dunn.
Not yet, though, I thought.
Right, that's true. They're not there yet. Either way. And yet everybody else is on the other side. Why do you have the same number of cities on the eastern side of the Yarden as on the western side of the Yarden? Do you have...
Because if you live outside Eretz Israel, you're more entitled to and inclined to kill.
More murderous outside of Israel? Could be. We have to see the Gemara on it, and the various
departments. Yes,
see, the problem with your answer...
The
answer that you just gave is the classic answer that people say. If you're outside of Israel, there were more murderers... yes and no, but more fundamental problem with that answer. Who is supposed to live in the Ur Miklat? Levium and accidental murderers, right? Not intentional murderers. The city isn't for them.
There are
more careless people outside of Israel.
You need equidistant, you need that amount to accomplish that.
Right. So Liba just took away like all the things that the Mepharshim have to say. I think that's the answer.
It's a geographical...
Right. I think the simplest answer to this is...
We'll remember by next week.
Good point. The most basic approach is to say that you need to be equidistant, so you just have to set up those cities. You don't have a choice, and they may just be underutilized. But we'll see. There's quite a bit to say on this topic, and I think an important message that comes out of it. So, God willing, we'll resume with that next week. And then after that, we're off for two Thursdays.